this is next to
Good afternoon, I'm Edwin Williams.
Thank you, Manamela.
I'm Freddie Peterson from the Department of Labor. Ronald Berico, CCMA.
Cameron Mazzano from the CCMA.
Ivan Salida from CCMA.
Tell me what's the kind of the Department of Labor?
Sam Rotala from the Florida.
Holden Dell, Productivity South Africa.
Well, my name is Goga, Productivity SA.
Carlos Tuebo from the Department of Labor.
Matuta Tuban from the Department of Labor.
Labor at the UI.
Thank you.
Comment patient plans in the last financial year have experienced some difficulties as a result of the launch of the new IT systems. Can you explain that our performance was reported to this committee at the first stage, and we want to report that as of the end of 2013 March, the number of awards that we obtained were 48,508 to the value of 986,687,000,000. You will notice if you look at our numbers that we have registered about 201,000 claims. Out of those claims, we were able to accept 99,126 and made 48,500, which indicates that there is a backlog, especially in the area of compensation payments and pension payments, because the system that we had was not able to allow us to process as fast as we did in the last. The next slide basically indicates the same information in terms of the number of claims that were adjudicated. Those that we have outstanding information where not all documents were submitted and the same could not adjudicate, and also the number of payments that we have made to the tune of 48,189,986,000,000. The next slide basically indicates the awards with respect to different products that we manage at the Compensation Fund. Additional compensation is a result of Section 56 where employees indicate that the injury that they have suffered was not the result of his own doing, but the employer had contributed to that injury. In that case, we have paid around 2.7 million. Burial expenses to the tune of 1.6. Lump sum to widows to the tune of 5.9 million. Partial dependency to the tune of 177,000. And lump sum, the amount that you pay for partial impairment, where people are not receiving pensions, they are paid for losses that are less than 30% of impairment. The tune of about 1,07,480,000. Pension payment, the tune of about 700,800,000. And TTDs, the tune of about 84,673,000. Temporary total disability. This is where people are not receiving pensions. I think this slide here is a reflection of that in terms of comparison compared to the different years. You notice that in 2013, with regard to Section 56, we made much progress compared to the previous year. And I think this was the result of the project that we had run with our industrial cost system. And with regard to burial expenses, I think we've done well compared to the previous year. I think the area where you'll notice that we have benefits in the area of partial dependency and also in the area of TTDs that we have not done very well. With regard to medical claims, these are the payments that we make to doctors, hospitals, and other service providers. I can report here today that in the financial year 2012-13, we've seen a 12% increase in invoices that we've processed this year. And we've also noted that there's been a 22% reduction in the value of the claim that we've paid in their current value. Despite that we've paid more, we have paid less in rent value. The reason could be attributed to the medical network project that was introduced in January of December last year through the EOH process, where we're able to cover the processing of medical claims. And as I speak today, you realize that we paid almost 200 million less than the previous year. And the, I think the slide would indicate that the drop in that value is contributed to the project processing of Anaba in what is normally driven, and it controls only the critical system that is used during the block development the project. With regards to our government space, we also want to report that we have experienced 142 cases of fraud and corruption, of which 86 were analyzed within 4 months, which resulted in 2 medical health care providers convicted and sentenced to 3 years house arrest and 5 years suspended for 4 seconds. We are also ordered to pay back 2.1 million and 455,000% interest respectively. So these are the coverage that we've made. We've also noted that in the same year we've been able to process other 4 medical health care providers who are still on trial for the 25 to tune of about 1.3 million. 7 ex-employees are also on trial for colluding with the healthcare providers. And also, want to indicate that 2 healthcare providers were on trial with the Health Professional Council of South Africa for participating in fraudulent activities. And these cases are still ongoing. With regard to collections, I would indicate that Mr. Brian Sigelson, who is our Chief Financial Officer, Brian Leschnick, who is our Chief Financial Officer, will be able to deal with the financial aspect of the presentation.
Thank you, Commissioner. Chair, members of the committee. I think one of the key strategic objectives that we set ourselves in the past year was an improvement in the invoicing on revenue, and a major initiative that we applied was the implementation of an online website for employers to raise their assessments and have them invoiced immediately. And that's been proven to be a major success for the fund. In the last quarter, we had 90, up till the end of the last quarter on the website, we had 94,000 online submissions, which generated a total revenue of 3.3 billion rand. In the last 2 months, when the 212 submissions were opened, we received nearly 83,000 assessments with a total revenue of 3.4 billion. And in fact, up until the end of last week, those same figures were 122,000 submissions with a total revenue of 4.7 billion. And in that same period, we received cash payments in respect of those assessments of over 3 billion rand. The month of April, we had 1.6 billion rand received in a single month in terms of the online. Other reasons for the success was the tightening of some of our processes around the issuing of letters of good standing, which forced employers to come online and make sure they were up to date. There were a number of controls that hadn't been in place on the old system. In total, when we look at our revenue, including the penalties and interest, we've raised over 8 billion rand against our target of 5.6 billion. And in fact, last year our actual revenues were closer to 5 billion. So again, I think the initiatives that we put in place around revenue have been successful. They're not obviously where we would like to be in making sure everyone's part of the net. And unfortunately, the Commissioner raised, we've had certain challenges with respect to the benefits and the paying out of the medical invoices. But I believe some of the initiatives we put in place will address that in the coming year. Next slide, please. If we just look at the financial ratios, as regards our current ratio was 4.1 against the target of 2.1, and that's a reflection, I think, of the amount of cash, additional cash, et cetera, that we've got on hand in the system and invested. And then our returns on terms of our investments have also been ahead of our targets. For the last quarter, we received returns of 1.4% against benchmark or target of 1.25%, and the pension portfolio nearly 1.1% against the benchmark of 1.06%. And that is a reflection of the outperformance of our benchmarks and targets, is a reflection of the annual figures as well. If we look at the actual performance in terms of our spending, etc., during the year, this slide shows our performance up until the end of December. We haven't finalized our annual figures, but you can see generally there was an underspend in terms of our fixed and administrative expenses, as well as the benefits to employees in terms of either the employees or to the medical. On the compensation of employees and admin services, we were running at about 50% of the total budget. In fact, by the end of the year, we, on the employee side, we were closer to 90%, and on the fixed expenses, we were closer to 65% for the year. Reason for underspend, so to speak, two main reasons. One, in the budget for this year, we had a fairly, on the compensation side, we had a budget for the implementation of the new structure that had been put in place to take account of two things. One, the decentralization of our services after various reasons, and then secondly, the filling of a number of key skills vacancies. Your paper document, Jeff. It would be page 20, slide number 40. Last slide in the talks about the budgets and long-term, medium-term estimates going forward. Have you got that slide? That's showing the budgets going forward, and what you can see is that those budgets are more in line with the original budget that we had for this year rather than the actual expenditure, because we're expecting that decentralization will now take place with the complements having now been put into the structure, and also the recruitment of all the additional staff that we had budgeted for in the skilled areas, those will take place. On the compensation of employees in benefits and also the medical services, what we're seeing is a number of the initiatives that we have put in place are starting to come to fruition. Sorry, Jim. So we anticipate that, in fact, we will achieve our budgets in these periods now that the initiatives that we've spoken about previously in terms of the strategies and the addressing of backlogs will start, have already started to have an impact in the last few months, and we're expecting that to be converted into an increase in payments to the beneficiaries.
Thank you, Mr. Bryan. Honorable members, the practice for 2014 as follows. I think what we have indicated earlier on that we have challenges around the IT system. We have looked around, and I think we got permission from the minister to implement the RIM system, which is a renewal assurance system, which we hope will assist us in addressing most of those problems. We also intend, we started the process already, to engage with the medical service providers to achieve their buy-in and also to engage the bargaining counters for employers to be able to come to the party. So that process is unfolding. We are also looking at implementing our overhead structure in full in 2013-14. And also we also intend to address the area that we've been found wanting, which is the area of filling the posts in the area of finance, appointing the full-time chief financial officer and the other officer, the chief operations officer and the other finance executives who have left the organization. I think emphasis will be placed on decentralization in the 2018 financial year, and also be looking at finalization and implementation of the turnaround strategy that is reported earlier on in the new year. And also, we will be focusing on putting before this parliament the new COIDA amendment bill to address some of the challenges that we have. And also, we intend to implement our new service management strategy. I think that's all. Thank you.
I said there was a case for the background information in terms of who you are and where you are from and all this. But we left the issue that we are not in that land but finished. For us, it's a very important matter for discussion. And you skip a lot of other slides, and that's why it was very difficult for me to follow the presentation, because I don't monetize what I have on media. Can we touch those things that we skipped? That a lot of people don't understand. Like I'm talking about outstanding issues. Issues that were in your plans and that you did not do well done. And why were they, why were those plans not implemented or followed? What might have been the problem? And what is this that we think we can go to help people reach the, you know?
Chair, I think if we go to, by the way, the slide is not numbered. In the presentation that we calculated, I think issues that were in the plan but not finalized in the last financial year will relate to the enactment of the integrated claims and financial management system to deal with community findings. I must indicate that there's been a lot of challenges around IT. I think Siemens left us towards the end of November, and we had a new provider in the new year of December. So we had 4 months with a new provider. As a result, there are a lot of issues that the ATF identified in the system that we need to address, which we are currently addressing. I think those issues also related to management information systems, because we still rely on the IT people to provide us with MIS. We are able to produce it ourselves in the system because of the design of the current financial system and sales management system. There are also issues around letters of good standing. What we decided to do was to implement a new announcement where employers can be able to access those letters themselves without having to ask from Pretoria or any of our Department of Labour offices. That process was stopped in the middle of February. So now, I think now we're moving with speed. We have just finalized the testing of the product, and I think in the current year we're going to implement the online request for letters of good standing, which employers can access in their own, if they're in good standing. Also, there was an issue of internet advices. You recall that in our last presentation, we indicated that the system that Siemens gave us was not complete, and therefore we were not able to do certain functions. For example, when we made payments, we could not provide medical providers with an explanation of the payment that we have made. For example, to say, if we've given you 40 million, what does that 40 million represent? What are the line items we've paid? Which items we've not paid? So that was a challenge, and I'm informed now that we've now launched that product live on the current system. And also, we were busy working on an electronic product where we wanted employers and doctors to report online. That was not achieved in the last financial year, and hope to achieve that in the new year. Hence, our intent to deploy the REN neutral solution, because it's a solution that will allow employers to remotely register themselves online, submit their returns, and report accidents online, and employers and doctors will be able to submit medical reports, and they'll also be able to submit medical accounts online. And the system will also be able to communicate via SMS, email, or fax to beneficiaries of the system. So these are some of the things that couldn't achieve in the last year we're planning to implement in the new year. We have come up with a new revenue strategy that was introduced in December, and I think one of the reasons that the people were saying that this year we've seen a massive increase in collections is because of the revenue management strategy that was not finally completed by the end of the year, but we're working hard to implement. One of the elements of that strategy is the issue of discounts to employers who pay on time and are able to use the online system without filling in forms. Because the advantage of doing so will reduce the cost of processing those returns, and we believe that employers must get benefit of doing so. We also have introduced some initiatives where we are saying that the letters of good standing, once they're issued inside the organization, will be able to identify where the issue put the letters. So those are issues that we could not do in the previous year, and are doing that. The backlog is one of the issues that we intended to analyze, we could not. And I think the project started in January is beginning to dent that process. And if we continue along the same line, I believe by the end of this year, we should have been able to hit the current medical chain backlog. The organizational structure, I think the CFO has dealt with those issues. I think also the issue of decentralization, which is also around the structure, the union negotiations. an amendment of our legislation, which was dependent on our board to finalize. And I think the board was only able to give the minister the new amendment bill in the new year. I think in the new year also we felt that the engagement that we did with our stakeholders, we could not complete the program because most of the time the program was driven by myself, and I've been to some few provinces, and then unfortunately we had challenges and I was not able to complete the program. Thank you.
Honourable members, let us introduce. The emphasis today on the financial because of this time constraint. But it doesn't mean that we only go into the cash figures because they are very important issues that we need to tackle too. I worry that you were unable to meet with your stakeholders, that is a worry. Because we have to look at your mandate to see how you are doing it, because you need to get feedback from your stakeholders about how you are doing things. So, as the way I've seated now, I'm already worried about that. Honorable Williams, Honorable Van der Vede, Honorable Motau, Honorable Albert, Honorable Masrum Mule, and Honorable Nyai Kemba. Thank you very much.
As far as I can see, the situation is dismal. Fundamentally, out of the 99,000 claims that were accepted, 82,000 of them were not accepted due to the lack of information on the claims. So basically what's happening is, you talked about you've got high returns on your investments, you've got lots of money in the bank, and things nice and peachy when it comes to that, but unfortunately you're not a bank. You're supposed to be distributing money to people. 83,552 claims were not accepted due to lack of information. Have you got a mechanism in place in order to show people how to fill the claims out properly so you can't automatically just dump 83,000 people who have claimed? Secondly, I just want to look on the Auditor General's report, which is also in this presentation that you've given us. The Auditor General talks about things like, and I quote, the compensation fund does not have adequate system and progress in processes in place. Also, it says the Auditor General is unable to verify the accuracy and completeness of interest and penalties. In other words, it just seems that it's going from bad to worse. And you keep telling us about a turnaround strategy that fundamentally we're not seeing. I'm very concerned about this 83,000 people. After you accepted their claims, you then say, oh, there's a full stop missing, you'll just have to not deal with these people. I'd like some clarity on exactly what it is that you're doing to ensure the people who do make claims to the fund fill in the correct forms. I mean, have you got a process in place? Because it's, what it is dismal. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be brief. In terms of fraud, were any of the private hospital groups involved? If so, if you could give us some detail. Secondly, software costs. Chairperson, and please, if you could just explain to us, it was my impression that the compensation fund invested heavily in software, which was then found not to be suitable, and then they changed to SAP. If you could just tell us more or less what happened there, and also what is the total expenditure on the buying of software licenses, the development of the software system. And if I may ask, doctors tell me that they can see online how the claims are being processed by medical aid funds like Discovery, etc., but they are not able to see, you know, which claims have been acknowledged, etc. Is your system going to allow for that as well? Then, if you could just explain the relationship with FEMA, if I'm not incorrect, it seems to me as if some of your claims are being dealt with in an outsourced kind of way. How can we get the statistics on that? Then, when will the total backlog be worked off? Can you please give us a commitment in that regard? The next person, there was recently a program on SABC2, which quoted the previous program 7 years ago where it was also said that the compensation fund was undergoing a turnaround strategy and that the problems would be solved by now, and it seems to me as if we were worse off than 7 years ago, at least worse off than 2 years ago. So please, why must we believe that the turnaround strategy is now going to be the one that will bring the opposite goods? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to share one to my colleague. Yeah, thank you very much. As you know, my bugbear with this with the compensation fund. Comrade William says it's dismal performance. I have other words. But the point I want to make is this. I have written to the minister to say, please put this entity under administration of the treasury. The minister has said to me, Honorable Motao, we have put systems in place, we're turning this thing around, and please give us the opportunity to see what we can do. I'm accepting that. Can you guys give me the assurance that you are really doing something about it? Because I have a lady in my office who handles letters of good standing like they're getting out of 8 years. We have all sorts of, in my view, minor kind, things that should be done by the department, I mean by the entity, but they come to us. And I'm just saying, can I really go away here feeling that I'm confident that you will not disappoint the minister?
Thank you, Mayor. Honorable
thank you, Chair. I would like to ask from the Commissioner what the total backlog is at the moment, and also what part of the backlog consists of legacy cases that's older than 5 years. And you also mentioned that there's a backlog project that you want to initiate as an intervention for this problem. Can you just explain exactly what the backlog project that you can initiate will actually consist of? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just wondering as to whether you can wake in the rain without getting wet. Is it practically possible? If you were in the army, they would tell you there is no rain there. when can we, with certainty, because you can't continue to heap the blame on the machine, the system, the technology there. But when can we say with certainty, in the next 1,000 days, 1,000, so and so hours, 1.2 million milliseconds, when can we say with certainty, with certainty that we'll be able to deal with the backlogs? And what is it that we think we should be doing to upgrade our staff? Because you can't continuously blame the machines without options, because the machines are machines. And what about the human touch behind the machines? What about our staff? What type of training do we need in order for us to speed up to resolve the backlog? Thank you, sir.
Honorable Nyagema.
Thank you, sir. There's a new service provider which started in December. I just want to find out, he was also sitting in the Board for Committee of Public Service Administration. Center. Always in their reports, they will indicate that there's work that they're doing with the Department of Labor. They will indicate that it's a compensation fund. I thought you will say something about that.
concern was is the amendment on COIDA. They will come to Parliament, but it is important for us to know when. Because this has been outstanding for quite some time. Important to work on timelines. Let me stop there. Thank you.
I just want to ask, looking at page 10, the 7 ex-employees are also trying for colluding with healthcare providers. I want to know, at what level were these ex-employees? Were they in management? Were they lower than that? And how many of your top managers were found with their fingers in the queue, if there is any, and how many of them are they? And if they are not, we want the list of the case number of those people to show that there is actually something happening with the cause about it. When a crime like fraud is committed, our interest is not only getting the money back, but I think it's leading society of fraudsters and criminals. Those people belong to jail. They don't belong on our streets. There have been lots of service providers. Now you're talking about the rent mutual and something. I'm hearing about this one for the first time today. And there were many others. I just want to know how many service providers are on your IT. Maybe you know, like somebody says, if you too many hands spoils the pot. It doesn't sound very good. I'm using English as my 17th language. If you can say it in Baroski, maybe it will make a lot of sense. Let's say it in Russian. But you know, too many errors won't start things. What is the problem? How many hands are in this problem? How many hands are spoiled in this problem? You know, if we can just have cooks here. Exactly. Crooks and cooks sound the same with compensation. So I think that information will be able to help us monitor. You know, and at what cost? You know, are these service providers to us? Even a CFO with a consultant working with another company, what is happening with filling up this post? Aren't there people who can fill this CFO post rather than having an in-house consultant? I mean, you know, some members of parliament have got their consultants. We don't tell you that. As a consultant, if you get into an institution, you go in not to move out. Finding yourself a niche and for your company to do a lot of other things. We actually worry when we have a consultant who is at a very senior level in this compensation fund. Something must be done about this. And if we have to take that consultant full time, he must resign from where he is to come and work for us. Or we need to get somebody quickly. Yeah, I'm interested in these people who are working with us at this point, particularly those who are doing our IT. Thank you, Commissioner.
Yes, I think my colleagues, in this place of training, I think Trevor will assist me. With the backlog, I will request Hilary to come to my assistance, and then therefore we'll deal with the issues of the performance, the digital performance that we experience, and the other financial issues. I think with regard to stakeholders, I think we set aside a mission to engage service providers because of the challenges that we're having, to expose them to the problems and to expose them also to some of the initiatives we're putting in place. I was driving that project on the structure of management. I think we've touched on a few provinces, and I'm fortunate about taking off the scene for months. And I was not able to continue. And I think each day, inherent backlog that was also accumulating, the officials were focusing on trying to address that backlog, and I think that focus on stakeholders was a little bit lost, and I think we are beginning to standard focus. As I've said, last week Congress, I was able to meet with the South African Medical Association, representing all doctors in South Africa. And I think we have a specific agreement with them. Also, in that particular meeting, I was also able to find out that they have provided the public protector with legacy claims. I think they in this 5 years, to the tune of about 130 million. And we have a bid together that we should agree on a format in which those claims must be provided, so that we can use the backlog project to eliminate them. And my director, Mr. Pillay, was in Japan, and I think on yesterday, and we're able to agree on the format. And I think the process that SAMA is putting in place to try to access those claims electronically from all the providers, so that we can address that backlog. I think those sitting with the public protector, they need to have about 130 million, which I believe, if this project with SAMA works, we should be able to finish that in the course of 2030. With regards to AG, I think I'll give that one to the CFO. Private hospitals, none of them are involved in the fraudulent cases. However, I must admit that there was one private hospital where there was a duplicate payment. And we've done our investigation, and there's a process to recover that amount from that hospital group. It was not the initiative of the hospital to defraud us. I think it was an official who ignored the warning on the system that this could be a possible duplicate, and they were able to pay that amount. But our risk unit was able to clean that one up, and we followed that. The CFO will deal with that in the collection side. And with regards to software, I must put myself clear here. We had an e-claim system that was doing the way that it's supposed to be done. However, it was based on manual processes. And I think during the time I was acting DG, during the time I was the acting commissioner at the compensation fund, I requested her to do what I call a feasibility study, and she did it with distinction. We were able to find a consultant to assist us to identify the stable social. And I think it was in the process when I came here to report that we were implementing the system, that we were told that SEP, which is a Siemens initiative, had to be implemented. SEP is a global solution. However, it is not a medical aid administration solution. I think we've learned bitterly from that experience. And I don't want to put fingers, but I would say we're all responsible because of the service provider who advised us the wrong way. And I think we are eating the terrible fruits of that advice. We were almost at the verge of implementing the land water solution because the consultant that did the physical study identified that the only solution in South Africa that best fit the company is the land water solution. Because we are administering the same legislation, COIDA. We're collecting revenue from employers. We're registering new employers, we're collecting from them. We're paying for injured workers. We also pay medical service providers and also pension. So the rainwater solution was not embracing for the commission fund. The issue that was at stake at the time was the issue of scalability, which is the technical language that the IT could understand. That was an issue that we should have addressed from an IT provision. And I believe the opportunity that the minister gave us to explore that opportunity, I think we should embrace it with speed and with enthusiasm to try to help the people of this country. So, on the issue of cost of licenses, I will forward to Mr. Vigas, Secretary. RMA and DIVA RMA and FEMA were not outsourced. The current Compensation Act provides that compensation in the construction industry and mining industry should be administered separately. Mining, Grand Mutual is administering the mining sector, all employees in the mining sector register. All doctors servicing injured mine workers must be processed and paid by Grand Mutual. FEMA will use everything in construction, and the commission fund will use everything other than the two sectors. It is not outsourced. It's a requirement of the legislation. There was an article on focus. Indeed, they had shown my predecessor who spoke about the turnaround time. And I think the DGP indicated in his presentation before this portfolio committee will not be able to speak for people that were there before him. And unfortunately, we did not have the information that was provided to Focus. We only saw it on Sunday when Focus put the program. And I then followed up because most of those patients that were declared on the program are from Solidarity. And I think we've had two engagements with Solidarity in that meeting. And I think we're about to finalize those cases. And most of them were in the Western Cape. And at the time of the interview, were not privy to the information that Focus had or could have assisted probably before the interview. Honorable Mutau, I think you requested that what assurance I was giving you. I think we here also before with the DG, I think we did give the assurance that the process that we're putting aside and to try to drive change in this organization. And I think we haven't seen the fruit of that process. However, we can report that if you look at the revenue side, I think there's not going too much emphasis to be put, but the numbers are beginning to talk. However, the challenge that is sitting there is around the management in the finance section and the enhancements that need to be done. I think that's an area that we need to emphasize. I think a critical area that we need to look at also in the area of claims administration, which we have already indicated that we are looking at having a new solution. CETA works with the IT department for our support. In our relationship with Siemens and WH, I think CETA is a supervisor of this project. They assist us in ensuring that we manage the IT environment in a proper way. The COIDA amendments suggest that through the department, the minister has been provided a copy. The department is doing what we call quality assurance to identify this legislative amendments that the board has put before us. Compliance with all other legislation. There are no things that we're saying them differently from the other part of the legislation of DOL. And also there are areas, for example, around governance that we have engaged assistance to look at what would be the proper governance model around the competition. So that would be one of the issues that will also impact on the new legislation that we'll bring. With regards to level of employees that we're meeting here, most of these employees are at a very junior level. We haven't identified people at the level of management who are involved in these present cases. And in most cases, what we've picked up in the affidavits that this doctor was caught is that most of these employees are enticed into participating into this process. There should be role players outside there waiting doctors and enticing our staff. And I think through our fraud awareness campaign, we're trying to sensitize that. And we believe that
any other fraud that is detected, we need to follow that to the end. With regard to the service providers, I'll ask the CFO to deal with that. The position of CFO, we have already done the shortlist, and we have asked the minister to approve the panel that must interview the candidates who are shortlisted for the CFO. As soon as we get that a panel approved, we'll be able to appoint.
Some of the questions that revolve around the finances, etc., and the comment about the AG comments and whether we're not making progress, and that's correct. I think we acknowledged that when we were here previously with respect to the turnaround strategy, that in fact was one of the key drivers, the AG comments, the public protectors report, and the SCOPA report had forced us to say we actually need to have a major turnaround. Part of the process that we're undertaking to make sure that we do achieve our objectives in the turnaround is a forensic audit. And the purpose of that forensic audit primarily is to look at what some of the underlying systemic causes of our problems are. Why have we had a number of turnaround initiatives that have not been successful? What is causing that? A consequence of that forensic investigation is one that if there are issues of maladministration or fraud, then we will take the necessary actions on the relevant parties. But secondly, having identified the causes or the systemic reasons for why these things are happening, then that will inform the turnaround strategy. The progress to date, currently a team is meeting today and tomorrow to evaluate the tender that was submitted. And that process, out of that process, there will be a recommendation that will go forward to the next, to the relevant procurement or supply chain body for approval of the parties or the companies that will then assist us with both the turnaround and the forensic. So we made a significant amount of progress on that side, and our intention is those parties should be starting their work by the beginning of July. The issue around, there was a couple of questions around claims and why, what will the turnaround strategy or new systems do? I think the first thing is, in the short, what we're looking for out of the system is a online registration of claims, that all claims will be done online, and that will not allow incomplete submission of claims. So if there's information that is outstanding, the employer who has the legal obligation to submit those claims will have to submit the information, the correct information, before the claim will even be accepted online. Once the claim is online, they will be notified of the progress of the claim. Part of the system that we're looking at allows for automatic adjudication of such claims almost instantaneously. A large number of our claims do not require compensation to employee. The nature of the injuries are not significant. It's normally some doctor's expenses and maybe a small payment for time of work, etc. But we are not looking at the major disability type claims, etc., that might require a complex adjudication. Those are built in existing systems that are out there and will help fast-track the process and ensure that we don't have future backlogs. We don't create a backlog. We still need to deal with the existing backlog, and we've got projects that have been underway for the last few months. And if we just look at the adjudication process, at the beginning of January, we had approximately 220,000 claims that were sitting in the backlog. Currently, we're sitting on about 20,000 claims. So we've managed to assess and put register a whole lot of claims that are now sitting in the system and get them adjudicated so that they can now be go through to the compensation division, who will determine what the appropriate payments should be, and it allows us then to be able to process the associated medical invoices, which make up the bulk of the cost that always associated with those claims. So for us, we have made progress, but as that project goes, we still understand that there are backlogs being created, and that's why it's important for us to get this pilot project in terms of setting the new process in place so that we can avoid any future backlogs. What those processes do is inform the employees or the doctors of the status of their claims, where they are in the system and when they are likely to be paid. Can we show doctors progress on claims? Currently, no. It's a very manual process, and part of the reason that we have the problems is because of that manual process. So we have no idea, in fact, of where the status is until we've actually processed it. The point of the system and the changes we're putting in is that we will be able to show the doctors the exact progress on their claims as a normal medical aid would do, because the systems that we've taken advantage of are the same systems that back the medical aid systems. There was a question regarding how many service providers. Our key service provider is EOH, who took over Siemens, and they are contracted by the Department of Labor to manage our both our hardware infrastructure and also assisting us with the management of our current SAP system. They do outsource to other specialists where they need to, but our primary conduit in terms of IT service providers is through the EOH group. I think the comment that was made is that, you know, if we do have additional service providers, example, if we have a new system, would that be a problem? I agree. That's a key thing that we need to manage if you're running many systems, and part of the project that we're looking at, we want to go to one system. We still have the e-claims that talk about the total backlog, you know, what of claims is greater than 5 years. Currently, we're processing on a monthly basis. We're below 1,000 claims a month now on the old system, and that's for all claims that were in place, in fact, prior to December 2010. So we're at a stage now where we need to take a decision as to whether we allow claims to be input later than that. The main reason that we do get those late claims is normally in the instances where the employers haven't provided a claim, produced a claim, because they don't want to get onto the radar or be held accountable, and normally the employee comes to a labor sense or something, having found out that there's a that they can get a payout. So one of the decisions that we need to take is, well, how do we make sure we don't prejudice those unfortunate employees who perhaps did not their injuries were not registered by the employer at the time. But I'm fairly confident that we can come up with processes to deal with those isolated incidences. I think that covered my section. It was just the one issue on training with the new system, which I can deal with. On the new systems that we're looking at, one of the key things that we're talking about and making sure that we have is training.
That's really good, the new system. New systems are not from the head and body to us. And my main one is that we've got the expertise in the department, you know, and we have the expertise outside the department that can help us to appoint people that we know will add value to what we do. You know. But which you can take in people who do not add value to turning this thing around, to actually, you know, making us look better and saving people who are, and most of the people we serve actually vulnerable workers, who if they miss their salary for 3 months, it means kids will leave school. But it's even worse through these people who are advising and helping us. We're even antagonizing the people who are helping us to deliver the services. Because if you cannot pay people, and not even they cannot even get their money through the agencies that are helping them, we receive letters from organizations that are providing services to you. And some of the things that they pay about the department it's something that we cannot be proud of. We will still need this service provider and how much did it cost us? How much money did we spend on these people who did not add any value to what we do? And I want to make a suggestion on the members if it's well with you. I think we need to have another day with the compensation, TG, the compensation fund, and so that we can once for all lay matters first and know where we are going and what to expect in the near future. I don't think engaging deeper and deeper is going to help us now. There's nothing that we're going to get different from what we got last time. If that is okay with members, is it okay with members? Let me just check with you. Okay. Commissioner and your team, thank you very much. I think yesterday I emailed the written questions to your office, and today we will be dealing with those the written questions to the compensation fund. We can even go deeper to understanding what is happening now going forward. Thank you very much. I'm going to give this opportunity to this next. Let's have a quick one and then let's give Netflix a chance and then after that we'll break for dinner. Dinner is going to be served. And members relax because we've got transport to take us home. Even if we knock off at one, it will still be okay. We'll make it home of us. I thought you have what I have here. So okay, I'm sorry. It's NetLag 16 AUIF and 250 South Africa in order. I thought you have this paper I'm waiting on now. And I was accusing of using papers that I don't have.
To ask for protection, Chair, but I may have to call on your services later on. But, Chair, thanks for the opportunity. I am impressed with the sort of just-in-time way in which Parliament works. So we were notified yesterday, that's when I got the message, that we were going to come. So we had to put together a just-in-time presentation, and this is an abbreviated presentation, I think, of the first one that we had sent through. So, please bear with us if there are some gremlins in the press.
I think Chair should maybe look into that at some point. But we had the two notices about the postponement of the meeting, but this particular meeting was very late notice, so we had to reject things. But I think it's fine. We will
engage with the PLO because we work through here with the Minister and the Department and most things. We'll make a
final. Well, you know, if you said PLO, I just didn't want to.
No,
Okay, Chair, look, I think, Chair, if we can maybe go. Now, Victor skips through most of the background slides. I think we're familiar with that. So, if we can ask that we just skip through those. Maybe go straight through to the slide on the finances, you know. Yeah, just maybe before that, just go back. Chair, I think just to give an overall sense of, in the last year and a half, in terms of the new strategic plan, which is signed off by the Prime Minister, Our focus in terms of repositioning NEDLAC has pretty much over the last year been on the functioning and capacity of the Secretariat. In other words, upgrading the processes and systems. And so a whole range of things ranging from financial governance and oversight to policies and procedures to automating various systems, staff development, a new structure, and so that's pretty much been the focus. While we're also looking at some way strengthening the capacity of stakeholders who engage. So you'll see in the budget there either a line item around capacity support for the various social partners. And I think the intent is that as we proceed along this path of repositioning, that we are also then able to more effectively promote a better relationship between the social partners and much more effective outcomes, I think. So, Chair, I think the good news is that maybe we can just skip through to the next two slides and then we'll come back. Just one, two, go down. Next one. Yeah. Just to focus on that, Chair, if we just turn to the audit finding of 2011-2012, there were potentially two things. And, I mean, we had an adverse finding, and that really had to do with the fact that we were still in the process of a forensic investigation. And so therefore, the opinion was qualified. There were also issues raised around the performance, one in terms of the outcomes, in terms of the objectives in the APP, as well as the way the performance objectives have been set up. So the good news, Jay, is that from performance perspective, and I just put up a summary, you can see that from the previous year, where I think it was said that just about 60% of the objectives in the APP would have achieved. We now have a situation where certainly across the board, over 80% of the specific objectives that were in the APP have now been completed. And that is a function of one, partly the improvements in the functioning of the Secretariat, but I think also the fact that social partners have worked quite hard in particular chambers to ensure that we speed up in terms of some of the legislation, particularly the technical industry chamber that we've had, particularly in the last 6 months or so. So if we can just go back to the financial data, Chair, just on there. So Chair, you will see, if you look at the year 2010-2011 and just compare that with the 2011-12 year, you'll see that, you know, from an income point of view, NEDLAC's budget income has increased from around 16, almost 17 million to almost 25 million. Before that, and this has been a historical problem, the entity had serious problems, I think, with resourcing, and it constantly been running into deficit. And I think that is one of the legacy problems that going forward we would need to address. However, in 2011, there was, I think, a recognition and there was an improvement in the funding of the entity. And there were specific plans and commitments made, which is to some extent had been achieved. But still, I think the one that we want to make is that if we look at the overall funding of the entities, probably one of the lowest budgets of the various public entities that we have. And I think that going forward, we need to have a discussion in terms of the mandate of this entity and how it is currently being resourced. But Chair, so again on the good news side though, if we look at the since 2011-2012, the last financial year, we have managed to work towards significant savings in particular areas. Now,
partly this had to do with the fact that at the governance level, in terms of improving oversight and policies, but also at the level of financial controls, we've done quite a lot of work in the last couple of years. So the particular areas in terms of the core operations, for example, around travel, which is quite intensive, travel and sort of meeting-related expenses, where we have managed, I think, to extract quite a lot of efficiency, whilst at the same time improving overall performance. And the idea is that we then be able to reprioritize those efficiency gains into other areas of a more strategic nature. For example, it could be around stakeholder support, but also particular areas in administration and staffing that would require going forward. So, General Goh, for this year we budgeted for a deficit, partly because we had planned last year to improve the infrastructure around the building, but for a number of reasons, we weren't able to achieve that milestone. So we have had to shift that back forward to this particular year, but also partly due to, as I said, the efficiency gains in terms of some of the core operations. We are actually sitting with a fairly good surplus, and we have made a strong case, I think, to Treasury as well as Department of Labour for the rollover of that expenditure. So we're sitting in a fairly, if not healthy position for now, and that is due to better controls. But at the same time, Chair, we need to begin to have a discussion around the appropriateness of the existing budget given the mandate of the entity and the expectations that is out there of that length. So maybe we could go on to the next one. Chair, I'm not gonna go into this in detail. It's just a different way of showing compared to the previous financial year where we've actually made some of the savings. Okay, just in terms of the specific milestones, and again, if you look at the audit findings of the previous year, and to give you some extent the focus of the work in this last financial year, as I said, one of the issues was around the financial governance and oversight, and what we have there is basically revised the Audit and Risk Committee Charter. We have just recently appointed an independent chairperson for the Audit and Risk Committee. It's known in the annual report, and we were at the Select Committee last year where we reported that there was a forensic investigation underway, and a lot of the recommendations that have flowed out of that we've just implemented on an ongoing basis in terms of the financial management and internal controls. We have also over the past year done a very comprehensive internal audit, which has laid the basis for the external audit now going forward, which will be done by the Auditor General directly, by the way. So the very strong focus, Chair, in the previous financial year on governance and oversight. The other big issue was around segregation of duties, and there again we've implemented a number of changes to comply with the key findings. And then in terms of the financial system itself, Chair, we updated the accounting system, and then we started making some improvements in terms of the supply chain management, but a lot more needs to be done in that particular area. And then also in terms of just improved management of our assets, which I think there was also a very good finding on that particular one. So I think we've made some good achievements from in terms of the financial function and better control and oversight in the last year. If we can just move forward. Sorry, Chair. Next one. Chair, just in terms of the administration, the priorities going forward in this financial year, forthcoming financial year. As I said, we've done a complete revision, very comprehensive revision of all of the policies and procedures, and we're now at the point where we hopefully with the new audit committee and the new chairperson that we'll get signed off within the next month, and then we will roll out those policies and procedures. A big focus going forward of staff development. In the last year, we made a number of important appointments. We still have one or two appointments to make, but a strong focus on developing staff. Essentially, we have a new team that we have to consolidate. There's also a need, and we've set up an HR and LEMCO committee, which we never had in the past, to look at the appropriateness of the current remuneration system within the entity. And then we have developed a performance management system for the entity, and we're now busy with the rollout for that in this year. And as I said, Chair, strong focus on supply chain management. We're actually setting up a supply chain management unit, and these are some of the recommendations that also come out of the internal audit. Further work on our IT and communications infrastructure. infrastructure and some spending. Then the big spend, Chair, will be on the building, just improving the building, which has been a bit run down over the last, and also just improving the meeting facilities, recording facilities, etc. So, Chair, I think I'm going to stop there and leave it over to questions.
Honorable Williams, is not able to. Honorable Williams, Honorable Fender, Honorable McDowell, and maybe what we asked before, since when do we prepare fridges? What is the fridge section? two fridges, 100%. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to talk about something that we raised previously last year and the year before. One of the problems we identified was the lack of high-level managers being deployed to the meeting in the various chambers. And I want to know from everybody, from government, from business, from community, I want to know if that's still the case. That's the only question I've got, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to know, in terms of your strategic plans, what are you doing to try and get NEFLAC to be a more productive organization? Secondly, there's a view that this is the place where big business and big unions meet each other and that they actually get to love each other, but that they don't care much for the unemployed, those that are not really organized and represented. Do you have any plans in that regard? And the last one is, does NEFLAC still have a credit card? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. It sort of dovetails with what Honorable Fundvestation is asking. And a good old, well, sort of colleague, former colleague, a guy called Vic van Vieren, who is now ILO rep in Southern Africa, has taken a swipe at NEFLAC. I'm sure you've seen the piece. Just like to hear your reaction to that.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of Honorable Williams' question, I mean, when you talk about high-level management, I'm assuming you're talking from a secretariat point of view. Yeah. Chair, we have, as I said, we've got the appointments in the last year. We've appointed a programs manager. We've also appointed two senior coordinators. And the intention, as I said, we still have another appointment to make, is that we appoint this year two more chamber coordinators. We are, though, sitting with a legacy. We can't just space away the existing people. So part of the staff development issue and the performance implementation plan is that we try and lift the skills of the existing staff while bringing in that fresh, more experienced blood. At the same time, Chair, we also recognizing, as part of a recommendation which was made in a previous strategic review, that we perhaps need to begin to rely also on external expertise on an ad hoc basis. Because some of the issues are getting a lot more technical and a lot more complex. So that's strategically one of the things we're also looking to address. In terms of the strat plans and what we do to make it more productive, I think, again, as I said, the focus for me, which is immediately within our control, my team's control, has been on the capacity of the secretariat. So a strong focus has been last year on the skills and competencies of the secretariat and improving our processes and systems. And as I've indicated in the previous slide, we have had a significant improvement in the performance of NEFLAC as it pertains to what some people may think is sort of humdrum work that is required. But the bulk of the legislation that has come our way, we have dealt with, and that is put in the EPP, we have dealt with under very difficult circumstances. And that, again, that's partly due to the strategy to improve functioning of the secretariat. But I think also the message to the social partners is beginning to drop, that we do need to improve on turnaround times. We have also revised the protocol document that governs the engagement processes. That was revised and finalized last year, and we are now busy rolling that out and making sure that social partners are held to account. And basically what it says is that for normal pieces of bills and legislation and policy that's not too complex, you have about 3 months to engage and to finalize the report. More complex pieces, we're looking at around 6 months. So we're setting those basic time frames, and that's helping us, I think, to drive better performance. In terms of the big business insider-outsider question, I think we're aware of that things need to change. I think it is time that we look at perhaps the relevance and the appropriateness of the existing membership and representation. But I think we must be careful that we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so it is a discussion that I think we are trying to foster. But it's not just a discussion for that. Like, I think it's a bigger societal question. I mean, certainly from the secretariat side, we're quite happy to engage in dialogue around that particular question. I think the one thing that does make NEDAC unique as a social dialogue mechanism is the fact that we are a representative-based organization and that you do require your constituencies to be held accountable to their constituents and to have mandates. And that's a fairly unique situation. I think the alternative of that is perhaps a very, very weak type of consultation. And so we should be careful what we wish for. In terms of the credit card share, we've done away with the petrol cards. We've done away with a lot of the previous system. We do have a diners club card. I'm not promising to buy dinner. But yeah, we have members of the audit committee also present in here. But we have instituted much more effective controls in terms of the credit card use, and most of that is basically around the travel agency. In terms of Honorable Motau's question, I've actually engaged with Vic all the time, and I've engaged with him around the article, and I think it's one way of looking at the article is that it is a swipe at NEDLAC. But I think having discussed the question with Vic, it wasn't actually a swipe at NEDLAC as such. It was really a swipe at leadership in general, and leadership particularly of the social partners, in saying that we need to begin to get into the bigger conversation around challenges facing not just our economy, but facing our society, and that's getting at the fabric of society. And I think at the moment we are going through a very difficult context and a very difficult conjuncture. And so it was basically a call for leadership. It was not saying that any of the constituencies that no longer interest in the entity. So I think we need to maybe look at what Vic has said again, and I'm quite happy to continue that discussion with the honourable members. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's take a 15-minute break for people can come and release so that we don't know around one. Let's give over to this opportunity to the CCMA. I was talking to Narendra and I said they only pulled the financials on the according to the invite. That's the problem with the last day. But anyway, over to you, Narendra.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. The CCMA is honoured to give an opportunity to present. What I'm planning to present to you will be partly what we prepared for the previous presentation we had, and then so I'm going to thank us to pick some of those slides, which are strategic issues and scorecard issues, and then I'll hand over to our Chief Financial Officer, who will take us through, according to the brief, in relation to the financial status. I would just like to remind Honourable Members that we only sent the financial status part of the presentation. So if you have a printout when you go out from the room, you won't have the part that I'm talking to you right now because we did it part of the presentation. So I've very nicely asked the officer to keep going forward with all the slides. I'm not going to take you through the basic details. I think many of the members here at any event have heard me and can stop at that slide. Just to remind everybody, the CMA has a very specific scorecard, and it has certain KPAs in relation to that, and following on from those KPAs, we have strategic objectives, and under that scorecard, we have targets for each year, and then we have achievements in relation to those targets. Our first target is always enriching the role of the CMA in the labour market, and we have details there in relation to how we've achieved this. What I'm going to do in the process is not take you through detail of each target, but rather actually take you through some of the challenges. So you can go to the next slide, into slide number 7. And you'll continue, thank you. Okay, so in that section, what are key challenges that we have with the implementation of the training layer scheme? And as you can see, we've got many blockages that occur in the training layer scheme at the post-implementation phase, which is quite a challenge to us. But in that basis, in the course of the last financial year, the CTMA at its section 189A level was able to ensure that we have at least 5,612 workers put into the train layoff scheme, which would have a high potential of making sure we save jobs in relation to that. Can you move to the next slide? Thank you. And you can see through that slide, the CTMA is part of its role in making sure it supports the economy. And in the course of the last financial year, through the Section 189A processes or Section 189, which is the retrenchment or large retrenchment process that the CTMA has, we were able to save 26,054 jobs under a route of 58,000 workers who could have been affected. We still see that as an achievement, bearing in mind that there are some voluntary retrenchments contained in that process. Can we turn to the next slide? Thank you. Next slide. Also, an area that I think everybody would be interested in, and I think that I just need to pause at this moment, and that is that the CTMA has set for itself very important here, a process in relation to its intervention in relation to industrial relations. And we were involved very significantly in certain national issues. I think I don't need to mention mining sector and the dispute between UMCU and NUM and Lonmin and the NNs to follow from there. But we were very involved in the mediation process together with the Director General at that event. In addition to that, CCMA was very involved in the agricultural sector and making sure that there was some kind of resolution brought to that process in Durban. We were involved also in the SACOL and some international matter, the hospitality sector, and significantly involved in terms of our national mandate with the road freight governing council. Now, we've just highlighted there four matters. It's very important for you to understand that those are matters you'll probably all remember. But the CDMA's work on a day-to-day basis is about intervening, facilitating, mediating the workplaces, disputes, and often ones that people don't hear about. But I thought we should just flag a few of those issues, given that some of them are rising again, and we're working at the moment in a challenging industrial relations environment. Next slide. Our strategic objective 2 is to build skills to achieve professionalism amongst our staff, and this is a whole area of work that we work on, which deals specifically with developing our commissioners and developing our staff to make sure that they can do their work, and we've made significant progress in the course of last year in doing this, in particular in developing a course that will actually ultimately be a degree or diploma course, which at the moment is not the case for commissioners. You can move to the next slide, thank you, and the next one. Strategic objective 3 is delivering excellent service, which is social justice, ensuring a balance between quality and quantity. This is really the area of work that deals with CTMA's work, as most people know, in addition to the mutual interest cases, which I've just mentioned, like the Marikana one. In particular, it is about the 85% of our work which deals with unfair dismissals. Now, if I just go to the next slide. Firstly, what are areas we focus on significantly, because the members of this committee and the members of your colleagues in the NCOP have constantly asked us to ensure accessibility. This demonstrates the kind of role that we now have in our offices and where you can access CTMA offices across the country. Next slide. Then in relation to the delivering of excellent service, can you go to the next slide? Next one. Okay, next one. Okay. I seem to have missed out a slide. Okay, don't worry. We'll turn over a little bit later to our financials, so I'm going to skip over the slide for now. And then also the important part of our strategic objective is to align the structure which will enable optimal implementation of our strategy. So we'll be doing a whole lot of human resources and organizational design, which we've achieved in relation to our targets last year. Can you please move to the next slide, the next one? Okay. What we've seen is also being important, and I think it's important on a strategic level, is that we've made sure we've held ourselves to be open, responsive, and accountable. And a few years ago, we had challenges in relation to governance and policy. We really put in place strong policy frameworks and governance and made sure that we've got proper information that addresses that. We make sure we've got continuous information to make sure people know what's going on. We're trying to focus on it even more. We've got very good feedback in relation to the regions. We've got very strong monitoring of quality and service delivery got an anonymous corruption line, which is very much monitored by internal audit department. We make sure in relation to any issues that are raised, we act decisively, fairly and transparently to make sure that they are reported, report them to our board, and follow in relation to that process. Next slide. These are the slides in relation to the previous strategic objective two, which are very important and people maybe always ask about. And this is really taking the performance of the organization from about 2008 to 2013, and it demonstrates on a year-on-year the improvement in each year of the targets that we set. And let me articulate and highlight two. In terms of the legislative requirements in item number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it says conciliation to those outside of 30 days. That is a statutory requirement, and the CCMA is required to do that. And we can happily report from 2008 till now, we do not hear any case outside 30 days. If you look immediately below that, we want to try and settle all our cases at 70% or more. In the last financial year, we're very happy to report that in fact we settled 73% of our cases, which is an extremely good achievement. Likewise, in line below that, the arbitrations that we were required to do, 95% of them were heard within the time frame that set. And then importantly, in terms of the statutory requirements, we need to issue arbitration awards within 14 days. That means that if you fill your case and you're a worker and you're waiting for the outcome, or if you're in a lawyer wanting to know what happened to your case, that you will receive your arbitration award in your hands within 14 days. We had it, the law says that the parties must receive it, which is quite a tricky thing to manage given the volume of cases we do, but we've managed to achieve that quite significantly. There are a few that are outstanding, so 1% of them are still late, but it's a huge achievement to 5 years ago when it was 3, 8, 10, 30%. So it's an issue of which we are proud. At the bottom you can also see around service delivery that the CCMA actually averages a conciliation within 24 days and an arbitration turnaround is in 61 days. Now you may ask, in 2012 it was 59 days, but in 2013 it was 61 days. The real answer to that is that the parties started complaining we were being too quick. And so we actually slowed ourselves down. They said the service delivery was too efficient. And so we obviously want to be responsive to our social partners and make sure we meet those needs. Good, you move to the next slide. Obviously that just demonstrates turnaround times in relation to conciliation and improvement that we've effected over the past few years. And next slide. And that just demonstrates what I said earlier and how we weight our scale. We have, if you look at our annual report, that there is a scorecard with targets and robot system which measures what we've done. And for the last 3 years, we achieved, our target is 3, and anything above 3 is a stretch target. And many of the years, we've achieved 3 or 4 in relation to the target that we set in our annual report. Next slide. Okay. This moves on to the strategic direction that the organization is planning to take, moving on from 2015 and looking at the board mandate of the CCMA. And I will use that to talk to you after when we come and present our annual report finally to you. We'll be very excited about the work that we've been doing in relation to that. Can I ask the gentleman who's assisting me to please move to the financial status? The emailed presentation says financial status. Okay. Okay. So what we're going to do now is move to the presentation everybody has and take you through briefly to the financial status of the CCMA. And in order to present that, I'm going to turn to the CFO of the CCMA. I may need to go assist on the... Oh, no, okay, there seems to be a problem. Okay. Okay, can I ask people to use their paper handout, or can we wait for a few seconds while we load? It seems to be a problem with the... Would that be in order for everybody? Okay. No, it's not using the CCMA. The CCMA prides itself on. So, Chair, the document that you handed out, we're going to move to that now. I'll tell you to everybody. I'll try and see if I can get it up while the CFO is talking. Can I hand over to the CFO of the CCMA?
Thank you, Noreen. Good evening again to the chair and the committee. The financial statement, I just need to note, that is still based on unaudited results. So that's basically an interim where we're at the moment. The first slide is actually looking at the financial position, where we're looking at as of March 2013. We're basically putting the comparative between where we are at March 2013, as I've indicated, it's unaudited, compared to prior. what you can see there is that our non-current assets have increased compared to prior year by around 8 million rand, and that was mainly due to the capital expenditure which we needed to utilize around the replacement of some IT equipment that needed to be done that had been put in hold in the previous years, and also ERP system upgrade that we needed to do, and also around the risk management tool also which we put in place. If we look at the current assets section, in terms of our balance, we're sitting at 339,000 rand, of which only 300,000 is in fact in undercurrent. So you see that there's such a small amount sitting in anything over current or over 30 days, so that's more of the efficient that we're doing in recovering the debt that we have. Looking in on our cash and cash equivalents, we're sitting at March at 71.7 million rand, which obviously is there to be able to enable us to meet our short-term obligation. If we move along, we're still on the financial position, but looking on the liability side, again, splitting between non-current liability and current liabilities, there you see that we also, our liabilities have increased by 4.4 million rand in the current year, and then the increase made to the income escalation that you've seen, mainly as a result of the operating leases that you've had, and also the new leases that you have as part of that function, the new leases such offices that we are now renting, but that mainly covers that. And on the current liability side, the increase is mainly due to the projects which have been put on hold as a result of the previous financial constraints, and I'll explain later as we move along in terms of the rollover that we've had from the previous year ending 2012. If we move to the current liability side, when you look at our accounts payable, there you see that we also say that the balance is at 9.4 million rand, of which only 80,000 rand is actually over 30 days. Again, that still is the policy that we have in terms of paying our debt, our creditors in 30 days, and also in line with the strategy of supporting particularly small businesses to be able to pay them in time as part of economic development that we're doing now that to assist them from that point of view. Now, if you look at our accumulated surplus for the period is sitting at 444,000 rand as compared to last year or the year ending 2012, which was 17.7 million rand. Now, the reduction that you're seeing is that in the year ending 2012, we reported a 17.7 million rand, but as part of the motivation of the rollover, which is submitted to National Trader, we indicated that yes, we ended up with a surplus, not necessarily because we had not delivered in terms of our mandate or services, but there was a number of projects that were put on hold in the previous year that we then applied to be able to utilize in this current financial year in 2013, such as on the non-current assets, as I explained further earlier on capital expenditure increase, IT replacement, the ERP upgrade, the training and other projects. And a lot of the projects we've actually seen quite good benefits out of them, more so around the procurement system that was put in place, business continuity plan that we actually put in place. Though you see a reduction again of the surplus from 17.7 million rand to 4,000 rand, but I still want to highlight the fact that SSMA, we still are insolvent position, and our solvency ratio is sitting at 1:1. If we then move to the statement of financial performance, the grant that we received in the current in the year under review 2013 sitting at 448 million rand. We have seen an increase on other revenues that is self-generated by CCMA through the training that we offer to the users. The increase of 82% was noted in the year in 2013 from 4.5 million rand to 8.2, as I mentioned, into the demand in training that we have seen received from our users. And again, it's still in line with the strategy from meeting the national treasury requirements to be able to generate our own income from that point of view. Another type of income that we receive is from the investment that we made. I just need to highlight that the investment that we made, it's not a long-term investment. It's investment within like 6 months period of time, which is based on the grant that we have received. Instead of leaving the grant received in the check account, we actually put it in the market, in the money market, which is coming at a very low volatility, yet quite favorable interest rate and favorable returns. There was no risk at all actually attached to that. We've seen that working very well in the last years. As you can see, that our investment increased by 30% from 7.6 million range to 9.8 million range in the current term as a result of being able to make those strategic investment in the short-term period. If you look at the total expenditure that you've had at 550 million rand, yes, it is 3% higher than budget, but I'd just like to indicate and remind the committee again that this was based on the approval of the rollover that we've had from the National Treasury to be able to spend on the project that I mentioned earlier that we have put on hold. And again, in terms of our mid-term budget, which we was approved in October, that was also indicated that that's related to that particular spending happening as a result of that amount of 17% million rand. But again, it has been quite a useful we've used this money quite effectively, as I can mention from the procurement system. We have been able to avoid it to be in a position where we can be able to have the contract management system in place, which was manually done for. Now it's quite easily automated. The BEE test certificates and quite a lot of things from our supply chain on procurement side that has quite been value add in the sense that we were able to monitor our suppliers that they are delivering according to the contracts or the SLAs that we have with them, which we monitor quite closely. If we compare the current financials with prior, is that you can see an increase, and probably when you look at the first instance, you might think 21% is such a huge increase. But I just need to indicate that obviously there are some expenses that are inflationary related that would be in around 7%, but you do have some expenses that are, like for example, our case assessment is volume triggered. As you see our cases for increase, then you see also the case assessment increase accordingly. The escalation that we have in terms of our rental, it's not linked to inflation, it's just the contract that we would have negotiated. And again, new leases that we have in new offices. And you have such certain expenses increasing, like an example, average of 12% on the electricity price increase. But again, what added is the spending that came up from the 17 million rand of the surplus that was reported in the prior year. So in a nutshell, before we go to the plans for 2013, it's just to say that CMA is in a healthy financial position, and in a sense that we are able, as I've indicated, we've got 71 million rand already sitting in our account as at the end of March, and we have been able to meet the efficiencies in terms of our cost variance analysis that we put in place, efficiencies in terms of the technology that we have to be able to achieve the results that we've had. Based on the interim results from our auditor that we've had, there hasn't been any issues of concern. The number of issues were mainly administrative issues. So in terms of our going concern strategy, we are still in line and not expecting any adverse or reports from our final auditor coming up. The last slide is just looking at the plans for 2013-2014, and the budget that we have received allocated to us is 594 million rand, of which 80 million rand is actually was approved by National Treasury through the Department of Labour to focus on this project as outlined below, which the director will actually be helping if there are further questions on them, but in a nutshell, they're looking at the implementation of the employment law amendment, the web enablement of case management system, which actually is going to be increasing more accessibility of CCMA by the users. And again, still in terms of accessibility, looking at opening new offices in Balcom, Tzaneen, and the Vaal area. And lastly, also looking at the establishment of the job serving unit. The presentation that was made previously by the director actually indicated how much of the job serving are doing. It's just further on increasing the work from that point of view. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. That briefly covers both some of our strategic achievements. That covers all of our strategic achievements and obviously what our financial position was, and then summarizing the allocation for the upcoming year and in particular specific projects that the CCMA will be focusing on in relation to that. Thank you for your attention.
For the presentation. I'm happy there was nothing about book when I hear it. And just before that, this establishment of a new job saving unit, how will it link with productivity? Or are they going to be addressing different issues? Will there be an interface between them? Shop square.
You asked the shop square question. No, it sounds good, the establishment of the cost unit. And I'm struggling in my mind whether this is informed by the layoff training layoffs. And even within that context, what is your approach in dealing with that? Because obviously, you have the acts that stipulate what needs to be done in the background of the job. Obviously, CCMA will only get involved if there's a need or participation, depending on the number of workers anticipated to be returned. So I think, can you be a little bit elaborative?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Ms. Mugutai. I saw something very fascinating in Peter Mansfield last time, like on our oversight, like a husky performance. We visited this labor center. There was a small office squished within the center. We were told to go to CCMA. I'm not very sure whether it's an initiative of CCMA in KZN or it does apply in all areas, but what was fascinating about it, I was just thinking as to what if it was to be applied in major rural areas, for instance. As a rural boy, I would not stop celebrating about it. It makes rural people's lives much easier. It was so exciting when I watched it. Very small CCMA office in Pyongyang. It's a very exciting thing to watch in performance. Thank you.
Thank you, Maya. Honorable Thunder,
thank you. Chairperson, if I, my quick calculations correct, it seems to me as if the CCMA present has about working capital to cover 2 months of their expenditure. And I was just wondering, you know, if you receive a translate, then you may run into cash flow problems, etc. What do you believe is a good working capital reserve to keep in, for cases like that. The second one is you've shown us the statistics regarding the efficiency, etc. But in terms of caseload, etc., can you perhaps just tell us how that has grown or what is the position there? And also, what are the options to try and relieve some of that? Will occasional guidance or other ways and means of engaging with employers perhaps be able? Because it is a lot of money that we have to give to you. I'm not happy with the way you've spent it. We appreciate the fact that you're bringing justice and closer to people that are really in need of that and who are quite often vulnerable, also in terms of knowledge of the law, etc. But it remains an enormous budget to my mind, and it just feels to me as if we must try and get the cash flow down so that obviously we can have the savings there as well.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the question. Chair, let me start off with the question that you raised in relation to the job saving unit. I think it's very important to note that all the entities in the Department of Labor Stable work together, and we have a very good, I hope, the CEO of Productivity SA will support me on that, but we certainly work together with Productivity South Africa in our job saving activities, and we live together and make sure that we do various work on it. And in answering your question, I then answer the question that Honourable Nkemba asked, because they're partly linked in relation to that. Firstly, the question you asked me was the motivation for this in relation to the train layoff scheme, and the answer to that question is actually yes. That was partly why we started looking at a job saving unit, because the train layoff scheme only deals with a very small area of work in relation to when you're dealing with vulnerable workers who are about to be retrenched. And one of the experiences of all the CTMA commissioners, and I think also working with Productivity South Africa came out, was the fact that on a regular basis, the first resort is job loss and job cutting without exploring the options of how other ways of saving businesses can be done or saving jobs. And so the training layoff scheme was just a small angle in relation to that. And what we did is we developed a whole raft of information, a whole training scheme where we tried to empower employers, we tried to empower employees, and we worked with them together to try and make sure that there were alternatives always presented in relation to retrenchment processes. And we continue to do this every day. I might mention that the large-scale retrenchment in the CTMA has gone up quite incrementally between January and March of this year compared to year-on-year last year. So the principle was that the CTMA believed that we would set up as part of our strategic information a job-saving unit, a return-to-work index around how could we contribute to the job creation or people being employed, because generally we're dealing with people at the end of their employment life when they're actually dismissed. So this was an area that we could work on. We put up a motivation into the process on that, and the principle on that is to try and train and to try and change mindsets around how you actually deal with job losses, and that is the principle that we deal with in relation to that. Our approach is going to be to have a very strategic section which reports into the Office of the Director, which addresses the job loss issue, which addresses trying to train employers, looking through differently to train trade unions, to talk to them about how we can try and put up different processes, look at people starting their own businesses. I can go on for a long time giving an elaborate answer, but that's the plan in relation to that. And in doing that, we work with Productivity South Africa, we work with the IDC, we work with the DTI, we work with the Economic Development Department to make sure that we can all try and link on the principle that we work together, we can achieve better and make it more. Honourable Mayor Rooney, I'm very pleased that you noticed the centre in the Peter Maritzburg office. I think first let me say to a rural person, we can always do more. We can always extend our accessibility more, but we are trying very, very hard to make sure that the CTMA services are more and more accessible. We also, again, work very strongly with the Department of Labour, and in different provinces we have different structures that work with that. So, for example, in the Northern Cape, we often work on the outreach program with the Department of Labour, travelling together. Sometimes we used to have a mobile truck on to go with them on that. We go on our own outreach programs and we plan programs together. We talk to workers, service workers, the processes on that. In addition to that, you see on that last slide is the revenue element of the case management system. That is again a process where we have worked with the Department of Labour to link our whole electronic system. This is an IT system that works, Chair. and then it links in with the Department of Labour, where before you would have to actually bring your case into the CTMA. Now we've actually made use of the resources of the CTMA to make sure that all have trouble at work, that you could go into the Department of Labour office as opposed to the CTMA office, which might nearly be as close to where yours is, and you can get access. In addition to that, we're doing a whole lot of other areas of trying to use virtual technology to make sure we can access people in more rural areas. In addition to that, commissioners who might go out to those areas to do cases always have an interpreter or one of our case management officers with them to try and on this on a day, like on a Thursday or a Friday, and the people in that area would know and they would come and actually we would find a system there and there's other person having to go into the offices and exercise that. So I have to say we can always expand more, but we're trying very hard to make sure we improve our accessibility, and hence I've got that map, which a few years ago, by the way, only had about 14 dots on it. But now we're trying to expand. But obviously, it's a costly decision because we need to balance that effect appropriately. A question from Honourable Van der Westhuizen. I'm going to ask the CFO to deal with the issue in relation to working capital, and then I will carry on relation to caseload.
The question is the 2 months which we have basically sufficient? And under it is sufficient. It's a good reserve, in fact, because what we do is we receive an allocation on a half-yearly basis, and based on the drawdown agreement that we have, we would have ensured that we submit the necessary documentation that needs to be submitted at the Department of Labour, which the first drawdown would happen in April, and we have never, in the past couple of years, we've never been in a position to receive any money later than April. But the 2 months in reserve that we have is still good enough to say, should there be any challenges or any delays, we can still operate for at least 2 months before the next grant comes through. So we actually do believe that it has improved. I know the previous years we used to be in a very tight position where it wasn't as much as 2 months, but we are comfortable with where we are at now.
The final part of Honourable Van der Westhuizen's question. Let's have to give you the numbers, and I'm going to tell you how I think we need to start addressing it. In the last year, the CTMA caseload went from 650 cases a day to 689 every working day, which is a 6% increase on day on day, 168,000 cases last year. But I think there are two things that one needs to note. Firstly, on a level of fiscus, in that time, while CTMA caseload went up to 689 cases a day, it doesn't have a commensurate increase in staff. Our efficiencies that I was demonstrating there showed how we were able to manage it efficiently and not call for additional funding to operate on a day-to-day basis in relation to that. Having said that, I think the thrust of Honourable Van der Westhuizen's question was more around how do we change what could be seen as challenging industrial relations environment. I think that's one of the challenges that CTMA has at the moment and how to address it. The broad mandate document that we've been talking about in the governing body of CTMA is start looking at are focusing not on dispute resolution, which is all statistics and what everybody knows us about, but more about our dispute management and our dispute prevention work, which is going out and training employers, training trade unions, and talking to people and trying to change the way South African workplaces operate. And we believe if we start addressing that, i.e. front end of the workplace disputes, we will try and then, at the back end, reduce the processes and reduce people bringing their cases in quite a combative industrial relations environment. And that is what our strategic focus is going to be following from next year. Chair, I think I've answered all the questions. Thank you very much to you and the committee for listening to me.
Thank you, Maya. We're moving at the speed of lightning.
We have also received the message that we need to focus on the financial performance. So we have basically summarized the financial performance of the UIF for the last financial year, and we're also touching on the summary of the budget that the UIF is working on for the new financial year, the 2013-14 financial year. It is a summary check because we are still undergoing an audit and we will have the final figure post the audit. And I think when we do present the annual report, we will have the details in terms of the financial as well as the other non-financial achievements of the fund. I will start on slide 10. Just a little bit. Where is the question?
The commissioner is hosting. I thought the apologies are already submitted. Apologies to the commissioner. The commissioner is hosting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Apologies for that. We go to slide 10 of the presentation. In summary, the EIF is focusing on four goals. The work that we do for the 5-year strategic plan on NC1 2011-12 was the four areas: one, to improve payment of benefits to beneficiaries, to improve the collection of revenue, to participate in government initiatives that are aimed at creating and sustaining different employment, as well as to have effective administration of funds operations. And if we go to the next slide, for the 2013, we have about 23 performance indicators, and we've been able to achieve 74% of these indicators, and 22% rather has been partially achieved, with one not being achieved at all. And as I indicated, the details are in the previous presentation that we expect, but we'll also have more details when we report on the performance of the UIF in the next presentation. So we go to the summary of the financial on slide 14. The contributions or the revenue that we collect, we have had a 10% increase in the revenue that we've collected. This is investment corporation for investment on behalf of funds.
So the improvement in the overall investment portfolio as well as the net inflows that is, that have contributed to the increase in the value of investment that we have. The technical reserves are up by 9%. This is the reserve that we provide for future claims. The accumulated surpluses of the fund at the end of the financial year is now sitting at around 62.5 billion. And this brings the total assets of the UIF to 81.8 billion, so about 24% up from the previous financial year. If you go to the next slide, this is just the summary of how we perform against our budget. You note that the one of the contributors to the surplus is the fact that we have been efficient, effective in managing our resources. As a result, we realized savings of about 15% on our administration. As indicated on the benefit that we had anticipated that we would implement the earnings in increase earlier, we actually implemented it. And on the revenue side, we basically have exceeded the budgeted revenue by about 0.9%. The CCMA in their presentation, they've touched on the issue of the training layoff scheme. The reason we also understand the area of poverty alleviation scheme is because the bulk of the funds that we allocate are allocated towards the training layoff scheme. So due to the low numbers that we've experienced on the on training layoff scheme, we've been unable to spend the money that we've allocated. However, be that as it may, the 1.2 billion that the UIF has committed towards the training layoff scheme still stands, and we're hoping that through the work that the CCMA will do with the productivity as they will see an increase in the utilization of the funding for training layoff scheme, as well as the other job creation issues that the UIF is embarking upon in the current financial year. If you go to the next slide, here this is just a summary of the budget of the UIF in the next slide. Chair, I think this is slide 38 on your page 38 on your text. We limit the funding spending on administration to between 12-15% of the total income that we have. And we have basically for 2012-13 financial year, we have budgeted to use about 8.5% of the total income for the administration of the fund. And we have, and for the 2013-14, we targeted about 8.7% of the total income that we generate to be used for the administration of the fund. If you go to the next slide. The budget that we have set aside for the 2013-14 for the contributions to collected, sitting at 13.9 billion. And this would be revised during the mid-year budget review, based on the performance for the 6 months period, because we have, this is based on an actuarial valuation that we do annually on the reserves of the fund, and we will post audit once we have done new evaluation, it will indicate whether we need to revise this figure up or to revise it down, and we'll do that adjustment at the time. If you look at the slide, the revenue, we basically on investment, we have targeted to have about 4.7 billion in investment income for 2013-14 financial year. Go to the next slide. We have budgeted for benefits for 2013-14 financial year 7.5 billion. And this represents an increase of about 7.24% compared to the previous year. The department will be bringing in the UI amendment bill shortly to Parliament. In terms of the bill, we'll then be looking at utilizing some of the surpluses as well as the growth in the investment for the benefit of the worker. So we'll be looking at improving benefits, and we have factored this into the budget for 2013-14. But also based on the valuation that we have, the actual valuation that we have at the end of the financial year, this year is likely to be adjusted upwards during the September year budget review. We also indicated that we've set a hike, we've committed 1.2 billion for the training of scheme, that figure still stands. 400 million of it has been budgeted for the 2012-13 financial year. And we have actually worked it down to about 105 million for the 2013-14 financial year due to the current interest or uptake in this particular scheme. We have also budgeted about 110 million for other job creation initiatives, the UIF. These are largely centered on retraining the unemployed beneficiaries of the UIF so that they can be integrated back into the labor market. The next slide. This is just the summary of the UIF budget for 2014. We're budgeting for a surplus of about 6.4 billion. And the table there outlines the other areas that we indicated. I think that we have already touched on the benefit payment of a billion and the 13.1 billion for the revenue or the contribution that we are anticipating to collect in 2014 for the question.
In line with your dedicated request of any other finances, I will now hand over to our CEO, Mr. Bongani Tsoga, and our CFO, Mr. David Lamy. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Chairperson and honorable members of parliament and my colleagues in Department of Labor. A detailed presentation that we've given you covered three sections, which was the plan for this current financial year, a summary of performance for the previous financial year, and the financial information. But I will only zoom in on the performance, and then the CFO will touch on the issue of financial performance of the organization. And what we did in the previous financial year, we looked at organization and identified a number of key areas that we needed to focus on if we can go back to the slide. And when we were looking at the priority, now we'll do finance later. We are going to start with the priority areas under that strategic objective, and then we'll go on to look at the performance of the organization. And, okay, let me wait until the drive is up again. Okay, I'll ask the CFO to help because you're already there. Yeah, I would like to leave out details. Yeah, I'll go to the slide that looks at the strategic objectives, which is the priorities that Productivity SA identified to look at. The first one is maximizing stakeholder management. As Productivity SA, when you look at the finances, you'll notice that the level of funding is quite low. 40% of the funding is guaranteed, while we get the 60% from other key stakeholders. So it's always important that you maximize the relationship with the stakeholders. The other issue is about the growth and sustainability. We want to ensure that as we grow, we are also sustainable. That we have done by ensuring that the contracts that we enter into are long-term. In the past, the challenges that we've had around the turnaround solution was the stops and starts because of the short-term funding. But last year, we succeeded in securing a real contract with UIF that will ensure that we increase our level of interventions on job losses as well as sustained organization. And then the next issue is about learning and growth. We need to continuously look at cutting edge and tools to make sure that what we are able to offer to the companies and organizations that we are assisting are of a cutting edge. And then the other thing which we assess ourselves on is improving responsiveness. We want to ensure that we respond within 48 hours from the time of inquiry. In addition to that, what we also do is we ask our clients on an annual basis to assess our level of responsiveness. And then the next aspect is demonstrating impact. Productivity is something that is measurable. Whenever we do some interventions, we want to make sure that we are able to demonstrate the return on investment. And then the second but last issue is improved provincial footprint. Continuously, we've been challenged at this level to improve our provincial footprint. The way we've gone about improving provincial footprint, in view of the limited financial resources, we've been working with Economic Development Department in various provinces and securing agreements where they would look at co-funding the programs that we are looking at. And the last aspect is improving processes, tools, and techniques. In the year 2006, we were privileged to enter into partnership with Asian Productivity Organization. And we are able to exchange, they are able to share the tools that they are having, as well as transfer skills to our colleagues through various means like coming to the country and training our experts. And we are also privileged to also get an opportunity to visit Asian organizations such as Singapore as well as Japan, where we are able to train our experts in Thailand and to make sure that what we provide is of value. So let me now move on and look at the slide that deals with the highlights, where we will look at how the organization, if you can go to the end of the presentation, towards the end of the presentation, because I don't want to take you through the plan for the current financial year. Yeah, Karen. I apologize, I picked up the wrong slide, that's why it's taking long. We have summarized in terms of looking at what you want to look at. Yeah, these are the areas that highlight what you've been able to do as Productivity SA. Firstly, one of the concerns that was raised by members of parliament was that we didn't have presence in Mpumalanga. So last year we succeeded in doing productivity awards for the first time in Mpumalanga. And we were also able to conduct a pilot on SMME, which was funded by ILO, which will be rolled out to other provinces. And then secondly, we were also able to expand the hours to include cooperatives. This was intended to align ourselves with the strategic direction of the government, which has identified cooperatives as an area where we can be able to generate employment within the economy as well as grow the economy. And then we've also been able to raise the profile of the organization by being in the media discussions. One of the challenges we've been having as well within the community was that productivity is South Africa's best known secret. But we've been doing a lot in terms of ensuring that we engage our media partners to ensure that the organization is better known and the statistics prove for themselves. And then we've been supporting industrial subsectors through the Department of Mineral Resources. We know that the mineral sector has been experiencing challenges, and we are approached actually by the Department of Mineral Resources to firstly prioritize AMPLAS, and subsequent to that we've been requested to also look at Lonmin, and then we'll also be looking at the mining sector as a whole in terms of looking at what are the productivity related challenges and what should be done in order to address those challenges. And then what we've also been able to do is to start tapping into the Eastern Cape and doing more work. We've recently signed a partnership with East London ITZ for a virtual incubator, so that has been seen as a means of assisting the SMEs in terms of sustaining them and also enabling them to grow. Productivity SA, in conjunction with the Department of, with the Limpopo Department of Education, we have been able to train teachers, and they were saying amidst challenges because at a particular time there were teacher strike, but we were able to get a significant number of teachers to be trained. And in the current financial year, we struck a relationship with the Department of Education where we will not only limit ourselves to training teachers in Limpopo, but we'll be looking at other provinces. Earlier on, I indicated the importance of partnerships, and these are the partnerships that we've been able to put in place. And the first one is ANACO. So ANACO is an organization which is the biggest in terms of dealing with cooperatives in the country. So in the last financial year, we've trained over 2,400 cooperatives. We work with CEDA. Much as we work on SMMEs, we are not in competition with CEDA, but we complement the work that we are doing. And we also look at working with GTI. As you know, the GTI is about competitiveness, but to achieve those levels of competitiveness, it can only be achieved through productivity. So GTI is enriching our program, and one of our flagship programs is funded by GTI. And then last year, we were also able to successfully launch a pilot in Mpumalanga in partnership with the ILO. As a result of that partnership being successful, we will be able to train other SMMEs in two other provinces in the current financial year. And I already mentioned that. And then the next point is that productivity has acquired accreditation in the South African Board of People Practice as a service provider. So what that means is that our training is accredited, and consequently we are able to attract more partners who want to work with us. I've already alluded to the SCORE project. The SCORE project is one of the few, we are one of the few countries in the world that are accredited to train on SCORE, and the only country in Africa which is doing that. SCORE is a tool that assists SMMEs to become competitive, and we know that with competitive SMMEs, they are able to sustain themselves and be able to grow. And then we've also been able to strike other partnerships with Tshwane Metro, Mafura Mafura Incubator, Limpopo and Rustenburg, and all those partnerships are aimed at improving or increasing the number of intake of the SMEs that we are assisting. And then last year what we were asked to do was to participate in a research study that was looking at government departments that are assisting the SMEs at a local, provincial, as well as a national department. And the preliminary study has indicated that productivity interventions on SMME ranks in the top three. This study is conducted by the Department of Economic Development. It will be shared with the Minister of Economic Development and later shared with the Cabinet. and then a partnership with Economic Development Department on developing productivity across. It's intended to make sure that there is a buy-in by both organized labor and management on productivity. And what we've been able to do was to focus on agro-processing, automotive, and green economy. So we were also able to touch upon the platinum group metal. So we run workshops where we indicate what are the key challenges facing the sector, and we get key role players to give an input on what can be done to make these sectors competitive. And then of the challenges that Productivity SA is having is limited funding. As indicated earlier on, that where the CFO is analyzing the finances, you would notice that the guaranteed funding which comes via the grant is only 40% of the funding. So we do spend a great deal of our time looking for partnerships so that the numbers that we present can be significant numbers given the size of our economy. At this stage, I will hand over to our CFO to deal with the finances and indicate the challenges that we've had to address in the previous financial year. Over to you, Peggy.
Thank you, CEO, and thank you, Chair and honourable members. I'll just zoom in into the budget, but before I do that, I just want to mention that in the previous year we had a clean audit report wherein we just had a small housekeeping matter which related to not submitting the predetermined objectives at the same time as the financial, being the first time that that was a requirement. It sort of slipped, but I can confidently say that in this current year we will submit on time. Looking at our budget, we're working on shoestring budget. We've got a total revenue of 122 odd million, and that is made up of grants and transfers, which give you the bulk of that, 150 million. And then we also have to generate our own income to the tune of 7.4 million. And then when we look into total expenses, we our biggest chunk would obviously be between paying for compensating employees and also paying for goods and services to service providers. Then there's a little bit on depreciation and interest paid. If I can just maybe go back up to interest received at the top, my colleague from CCMA mentioned that they received their tranche half yearly. So that then results in interest being earned on the surplus income whilst waiting for it to be applied. And we did see that, and we will show it when we present the annual report, that the transfer that we did get from one of our funders, we did not use it immediately, and whilst we were waiting to utilize it, we did earn a little bit of interest. Next slide, please. What that shows is where the revenue is coming from. The breakdown, as my CEO mentioned, the bulk of the guaranteed revenue is about 40%, give or take. So the 40 million from the Department of Labor and the 9.7 from the Workplace Challenge. So those two will give you roughly the guaranteed. And then you've got turnaround strategy, which funds our turnaround solutions program, where we aim to assist companies in distress and put them back on track. So that then gives us the total transfers of 150 million. But I must stress that the 65 is actually not the guaranteed funding going into the future. Next slide, please. With this one, I'm just showing the split between own generated revenue, about 7.4 million, that will include interest in any other projects and partnerships that we do. My CEO mentioned Anglo Plus, so that will fall into that category. And then that accounts for roughly 6% of our total revenue. Next slide, please. I think I'll pause there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you for talking to me. Say, how strong is that bad? Thank you very much.
honourable members, you know, say your thing.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want some clarity on your goods and services. 83 million, and what percentage of that is consultants? Thank you.
Any other disturbance
there?
Thank you, Acting Dean. Chairperson, just things. The first one is, it seems to me you've got quite a sizable contract with the Unemployment Insurance Fund. The question is just, for how long is that contract? And did you compete in the open market to get that agreement? The second one is, it seems to me, well, I've been told that Treasury was concerned about the liquidity and the going concern status of productivity, say, at one stage. Have you been able to resolve that, and have you been able to submit that, because it seems to me not only do you use that as turnaround strategies for other people, you were also required to do a turnaround strategy for yourself. Have you been able to submit that to Treasury? Are you on track now, or are you going for the next turnaround? Thank you.
I'm interested in the training of schools around reform. May I ask the type of productivity training that you have given to the school, and why Limpopo? No, it doesn't have to be Mpumalanga, but certainly most of your activities find footprint in Limpopo. You know, it's good to work for your constituents, but can I just be given insight on as to the type of training that the educators get and how they then can implement that in their various schools? Maybe the model can be transferred to other schools and elsewhere.
You almost answered my question before you even asked. I thought you would want to very briefly be specific as to in what major centers in this mind, for instance, where you are located and are functional, so that the information for me would be very important. Just before we get into response, there's absolutely nothing you had pleasure from this committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'll tackle the first three questions, and I'll ask my CEO to tackle the easier one on training. On the goods and services, it includes all the payments that we make, things like the rent for the premises that we lease, the goods and services that we consume from service providers, whether buying stationery or paying for the training venues or catering, all the expenses that we incur. It's just that the budget is not itemized, but when we report on the annual report, it will give a better picture. Generally, on the account of consultants, we do not generally use consultants except in areas where we are not experts. So if we are turning the company around and in the mining area, naturally we're not experts in mining, we will then bring in a mining engineer to do specific work in that area. And on the question of the length of the contract and did we go to tender, the length of the contract with the URF is 3 years, and it was, and my CEO can come in and my other colleagues from Department of Labor, but that was born out of the need to fund the Turnaround Solutions Program, and then Department of Labor, to whom we report, then commissioned the UIF to then fund us on that program. It is a 3-year contract, 154 million over 3 years.
Thank you.
question on liquidity and going concern and Treasury asking us to turn ourselves around. It is a fact that our financials last year, we posted an accumulated loss of 3.5 million. But how that happened was, in the year before that, in the 10-11 year, we had a surplus of 9.9 million. But because our balance sheet was thin, then in the 2012 year, we posted a loss for the year of 13.9. So that catapulted us into a cumulative loss. But we have written to Treasury, we've got a turnaround plan, and part of the turnaround plan are the initiatives that we're doing, the partnerships, the projects outside of the grant funding, where we've done work for various institutions, the UIF, we've done work for them, the Anglos and other entities, and we've just recently signed a 30 million contract over 3 years with a major entity. And here we are on track. We reported to our Audit and Risk Committee, to Treasury. We are in constant communication with them. And I think I'll then hand over to CEO to take the questions on training. Thank you.
Let me also contribute to the difficult one. The difficult one is around the sustainability. I want us to go to the next slide. There's something I want to illustrate in relation to this one. When you look at that toll grant, it's 40 million, and then let's go back to the previous slide. And then you would notice that compensation to employees is about 88 million, meaning that after taking money from the grant, you hardly have enough to pay for the rental. And when we were getting the funding for the turnaround, the initial agreement was that we should use that money only for external service providers. But we were then subsequently able to demonstrate to UI and Treasury that we need to recover the cost of turning around companies using the dedicated resources from the funding. And after a lot of convincing, both Treasury and UIF have agreed. In the absence of that, we were going to have sustainability problem. And then secondly, sustainability problems are also addressed when you have a long-term funding. So that we have secured with UIF, the contract we have entered with Rand Water is over 3 years. The contract that we are having with City of Johannesburg also over 3 years, as well as with Transnet. So having long-term contracts that are augmenting the grant also go a long way in terms of improving our sustainability. But we will continue to also plead to Portfolio Committee on Labour to look at increasing the level of funding, because we think we can do more in terms of contributing to job creation, the economy, sustainability, economic growth, and 40 million in relation to the size of our economy may not be sufficient. And then in terms of training in schools, yes, early on when I was making presentation, I indicated that we have subsequently struck an agreement with the Department of Education, which will help us to go to other provinces. One of the challenges that I can share with you regarding the training of teachers, it has always been our commitment to do it nationally, but there have been political challenges around the utilization of teacher time, because we use private time of the teachers. So there's been a lot of resistance. So it's Limpopo that warmed up. It's not out of lack of trying. And on the other hand, if you were to also analyze the results of productivity, say provincial, you would see that we get most of the support from the economic development in Limpopo. But we are working hard in terms of other provinces. For an instance, Mpumalanga has warmed up. We are getting Eastern Cape on board. And last year, towards the end of the financial year, we were also able to get KZN on board. So we are working tirelessly in terms of ensuring that our footprint goes to all provinces. But if the issue of funding was not a hindrance, then we will go wherever we are sent, but we have to wait until we have an agreement in that province for us to be able to make a meaningful contribution in that province. With regard to issue of content of the training, what we want to be able to do is to inculcate productivity mindset within the learner. They need to know how to manage their time. They need to know how to deal with wastage. Within the schooling environment, there's a need to understand the cost of absenteeism to a learner. So those are some of the things that we are inculcating. And we also get a positive feedback from the teachers that participate in those programs, that they are able to go and introduce the importance of productivity mindset in learners. Thanks. Okay, my colleague has indicated that there's one question that I have skipped. It's around major centers. Again, it also talks to the level of grant, which I said was on the next page, which is about 40 million. We are unable to have offices in all provinces, because if you look at 40 million and you take out the 3.8, we're left with very little that is guaranteed for paying rental in provinces. We would be putting ourselves at risk if we were to invest a lot of infrastructure supported by funding that is not guaranteed, because as indicated, the funding that DTI gives us is voluntary, they can withdraw it anytime. UIF funding, which is significant, about 56% of that funding, is also subject to the approval by the board of UIF. So consequently, we only have centers in the provinces where there's high level of economic activity, like KZN, Devon, as well as Gauteng. But that doesn't limit how we are able to do work in other provinces. We are still able to work in provinces that we do not have presence. Like, for instance, as you've seen with Limpopo, we don't have an office there, but we have been able to do a lot of work. But this time, we will look at working through the labor centers to increase our footprint in provinces. Thank you.
Thank you, Bahia. Are there
Thank you very much. I was hoping that we'll have the last one maybe here, but it seems not to be around the sheltered employment. Let's see if we have something about that, but what are we doing?
I'm trying to clarify Chile with the DCJ, was that the understanding of the chat muscle? Yeah.
Hello. Normally, DG there and Chairperson, the finances officers are presented as part of the department. As currently, CEF is not a public entity, there is a process that all of us know that is trying to clarify their legal status, even their strategic plan, and the financials are not tabled to Parliament separately because of the legal problem. However, if there's a need for them to still come, we can make arrangements. When an invitation was extended, it was not clear as to whether SEF should come.
Department and all these entities, but if, for instance, their status is still at that level, but we need to know what is happening with them, because I think it is within our mandate to know what is happening with SEF. And if there are hiccups here, what is this that we can do to help you speed up this process? It is a very important component within the department. Just some 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks, we had a meeting with the Deputy Minister, Women and People with Disabilities. So I don't know which way it comes first.
Last Williams is already out.
Oh, I'm